And welcome to Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis, here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, Dee Andrew, and tonight my guest is Alejandro Rojas. Tonight my guest is the Director of Public Education for the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON. Representing MUFON, Alejandro lectures and does television and print interviews and has been interviewed by radio stations across the country. His role includes media relations, which gives him a unique insight into the media's handling of the UFO subject. Alejandro will be one of the featured speakers at this year's Roswell UFO Festival, and I recommend everyone check out his excellent website at www.ufothinktank.com. And everybody join me in welcoming Alejandro Rojas to our program tonight. And how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing pretty good. It's a beautiful day today. Finally, summer, I think, has arrived to Colorado, and I'm definitely happy about that.
Oh, great. I love great weather. It's too warm and toasty here in Arizona. It's supposed to be 105 today.
Holy moly.
Pretty warm.
Yep.
I was looking through the list of the things that you're involved with, and it's amazing. TV interviews, documentaries, everything. It sounds to me like you're a lot like I am and is really into educating the public on this subject.
Yes, definitely. You know, there is a lot of credible information out there, and a lot of times as investigators and researchers, we can get really into what we're researching and looking at, and we kind of forget or lose our ability to frame what's great about this and why people should believe in this sort of stuff. And so concentrating on that and sharing that with the public can be very rewarding, especially when you see these people, you know, in their expressions and their feelings when they get access to some of this information or informed about some of the information that just isn't readily out there in the general public.
I've noticed that you've been doing a lot of digging into how the mainstream media reports the subject of UFO reports, like the Stevensville case, for example.
Yeah, paying great attention because, you know, it is, I use that word framing, or the way you approach the subject does seem to be really important to the media. And what's wonderful is the MUFON perspective has been helpful, and that's something, you know, I really want to talk to in Roswell, is that with MUFON we get criticized a lot for being so conservative. Only focused on the nuts and bolts and things like that. And we are very conservative. However, you know, I think that that's our niche in this field. There's certainly room for a lot more exploration, and I do that. I belong to other organizations, and I like to look into other arenas. However, you know, there's definitely space for an organization like MUFON, and it's important that we do gather that data, you know, have a very high bar for the level of investigating that we want to do with that data, and be very careful about the presentation of the data that we do gather so that we are releasing it in a credible way. And the fortunate thing in the last couple of years is that the media has definitely appreciated that. We get calls quite often from media around the world, documentary makers who want information on what to cover, or information about a certain sighting in some area, or maybe a very popular sighting that's happened. And when you can give them that credible information and those references of, let's say, PhDs or authors or people who have credentials and have done a lot of research in a certain area, the media loves that because then, you know, that's something they're looking for. They're looking to quote people who are credentialed and are authorities in those areas. And that's been very helpful. They've definitely started to appreciate that, so they come back to us, which is great because then we're getting better and better information out there. So our niche, our role has been that area, and it's very important, I think, that MUFON stick there, that we do cover this area. And I think it's also important that we support and work with other organizations that are doing other things, that are maybe going deeper into research in areas that maybe the public isn't ready for yet, or that is maybe more philosophical or theoretical, which is great. And it's wonderful that those groups are out there. And really, it's going to take all of us together to really move this where we all would like to see it go.
Well, personally, I'm glad to see that the giggle factor is starting to go by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
You see so many of them come up and say, oh, well, for the tinfoil hat, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Excuse me, what got you started into this, into the UFO subject?
Really, I've been interested my entire life, but what really got me to invest the majority of my time outside of work to this was the Disclosure Project. I found out about the press conference that Stephen Greer had held for the Washington Press Club months after it happened, and that really was extremely shocking to me. First of all, because of the incredible people he had there, the incredible people he had speaking about their amazing experiences, and the number, I mean, hundreds of witnesses, and of course, 20 of the best ones there at the conference. And, you know, the way he puts it, that these are the people who literally have the trigger on, some of these people literally have triggers, their finger on the triggers of nuclear missiles or bombs, and if we can't trust those people, if they're crazy and making up wild stories, then we've got a bigger issue here, possibly, or a major issue, along with, you know, being visited by from civilizations or technologies from off planet. But so that was one side of the whole thing. Also, I was a journalism major, broadcast journalism, and I was a news hound for many, many years. And it was shocking to me that I didn't know about this, that the media did not cover it, that the media didn't, of course, make a real big deal about it, but not even the documentaries, the UFO documentaries of the time, were covering it. And that, to me, was amazing. And that, to me, was a change of perception. It told me that there are things that the media will not cover, that they'll put above making money. Of course, media is definitely very money-driven, looking for as many viewers as possible. And people like to say, well, you know, if there were some incredible things going on in the UFO arena, the media would cover it because they would want to get those people watching their shows. Well, this proved to me that that wasn't the case, because this was an extraordinary happening. The Washington Press Club, all the media was there, and they still didn't really cover this story, even though it would have gotten lots of people watching. And so that told me that there's something else going on here, that there are some things that the media isn't looking at for whatever reason. And so I started to look at those sources that aren't provided to us conventionally or through conventional media, and I found this, you know, the Disclosure Project itself was the first smoking gun to me, but after that, I found a lot of smoking guns buried in information that isn't shared with the public. So that's what got me into investigating and looking into this and taking it very seriously. I then became a MUFON investigator and got involved with the local MUFON group, and my investigations were really centered around getting to know these people who are seeing these things. What are they like? Are these people credible? That would be a big deal to me at the time. If I could meet someone who's seen something incredible, I could interview them in a journalistic, unbiased style without leading them in any way, and find out if I feel they are credible and they did believe, do believe they saw what they saw, And as an investigator, when I've actually gone out on an investigation, personally, more often than not, I've found these people to be very credible. Some of them, at least, well, three of my first investigations were with ex-military who had recently gotten back from Iraq, one of them with a ex-police officer, and these guys had experience. They really knew what they were talking about. They wouldn't go out on the limb and report that kind of thing normally, but they felt so strongly about what they had seen that they really had to let us know. And all of these sightings were very compelling, so that just further kind of pushed me into doing more and more in this arena, and it's never stopped. As you said, I've got probably too long of a list of things that I work on, but it's hard to say no to, because there's so much that needs to be done in this arena.
Oh, I agree on that point. There's always something new coming up or something. Well, for this video that was talked about yesterday there in Colorado from Stan Romanak.
Yeah, that's another great example. Actually, I was a facilitator of that press conference for the most part. It was a request from the gentleman who was putting forth this ballot initiative, and that's what the whole thing was supposed to be about. That's what the majority of the press conference was focused on, was this ballot initiative this gentleman, Jeff Peckman, had put together, where he had actually seen John Schuessler, one of our board members and our last director, speak, and he talked about the government, and the government not seemingly to get involved, at least in a public fashion, with this arena, and he felt perplexed by that. Jeff had worked in different priest initiatives, and he had felt, you know, we are the government. I want to put together a ballot initiative and get people to sign this and actually get it on the ballot to create an extraterrestrial commission, because we do need to look into these matters. And so that was his idea. One of the other things he was inspired by was Stan Romanek. I've actually been working on that case also outside of MUFON for a couple years. And Stan has been doing lately a few... It started kind of real intimate as these small presentations to share all of the stuff he had gotten. Essentially, he's had so many experiences and gotten so much material, he wanted to share that. And so he had small groups and shared it with them. And that grew as the word got out. In the last gathering he had, there were 400 people there that he had showed this material to. And they all come out, their jaws drop. Well, Jeff, coupled with, you know, John Schuessler's talk, these are the things that inspired him to believe that this legitimate, you know, research that needs to be done, and that the government does need to pay attention to it. So that's why he's fashioned this. So he had a press conference because he was getting a lot of media attention for his ballot initiative. And at this press conference, he wanted to demonstrate why he did this, why he got involved with this arena. Unfortunately, John Schuessler wasn't available, so he asked me to come and speak to all of the evidence out there for UFOs. And actually, Stan, he had gotten permission from Stan to get and show a clip of one of Stan's videos. Now, I personally thought that was probably not a good idea, because really, Stan has a whole body of evidence here. A lot of great stuff, and to present one piece by itself really doesn't help demonstrate the validity to what is going on with him, or the possible validity to what's going on with him. So, and plus, I feel, you know, a lot more research needs to be done in Stan's case. We really, I've been able to help gather some of the physical evidence and package it and get it to different sources who need to do some analysis on it. However, really, it's been a small group, and there hasn't been a sufficient amount of research done on this case, and really analytical type of research from people with the credentials to do it, to back up what's going on here. And I personally feel that's what needs to be done. And I'm finding that the whole subject as a whole is the best way to do it. But they decided to go forward with showing this clip to the media as long as they didn't film it. And that's what happened. And, of course, as I had suspected, the media forgot, really, the entire press conference and what we had talked about or what we were even there for. And their focus was solely on this video and information about that video. So it's been difficult because, you know, nobody really has enough information to go on. But with the little bit of information they have, you know, a lot of people are able to easily just kind of blow the whole thing off. So I think there is some interesting there stuff that I think really stances does warrant more research. As MUFON, as an organization, we've really only lightly, officially have looked into the case. Really, we haven't had enough access to the evidence to do any real research on it, so we don't have any conclusions. But with my personal experience, I do feel that it does warrant, and I think there would be some very, very fruitful discoveries found if people did more research into his case.
Well, I had Dr. Jack Kasher on a few months ago, and we spent a good, I believe almost the entire last hour of the program just discussing Romanak's case.
Oh, great. Yeah, he's
and
done some great work.
So my listeners are familiar with Stan Romanak, and you know, I can tell you this video has got everybody all abuzz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Jack's done some really great, incredible work. He can tell you that there is some interesting stuff going on with Stan.
I believe his name is Pickman, the gentleman that's trying to get this initiative going. I haven't been able to find out too much about this gentleman.
Well, he's not a UFO person. He hasn't been. He's been coming to these meetings. Actually, there's a gentleman who has a group called the Paranormal Research Forum here in Denver. He actually gets quite a decent crowd on a monthly basis, bringing in different speakers in these various subjects, including UFOs. And Jeff Peckman has been coming to those meetings and being able to experience all of this and gain some knowledge and insight into the arena. But, you know, he's a concerned citizen. He's someone out there that took the initiative to create an initiative. And it would be difficult to really find a whole lot of information on him.
Oh, I throw my support behind the guy. I hope his initiative succeeds. It's a step in the right direction, at least.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. I think I hope that it inspires others to do the same. It would be wonderful if he does get the 4,000 signatures, and it would be even more wonderful if, you know, the voters floated in, because there is some serious implications, of course, if things really are flying around. As I talked about in the press conference, we've had thousands of reports reported to us at MUFON for Colorado, and Colorado is in the top 10 almost always when it comes to sightings and our monthly records. And even in Denver County alone, and this is just Denver County, we've got over 150 sightings, written reports, in that area in the last couple of years. So there's definitely things going on. And the question I posed is, you know, what would the government do if they were faced with a Phoenix Lights type situation? Because, of course, the city council was blitzed with thousands of reports when the Phoenix Lights happened. And they had a difficult time dealing with it. And, of course, their governor had a difficult time dealing with it. And I think lots of us would agree he didn't deal with it in the best way by having someone walk up there in an alien outfit. But, of course, we probably all know, all of your listeners are familiar with Vice Simington, the governor I'm referring to, and that he's coming out and saying he saw them and he believed they were, it was an extraterrestrial craft.
Which, when he came out and publicly said that, really surprised me tremendously. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's wonderful. And that was, you know, really getting into the media and kind of the history of how things have built. That was a big deal when that came out. You know, someone of his caliber, it's difficult to laugh in his face and to make fun of him. And they really did treat that pretty well. They interviewed him. He's a very serious and articulate person. He's a very likable guy. And, you know, people take him seriously. So the media took him seriously and treated him well. He's an ex-governor, so he's kind of incumbent upon them to treat him with a little more respect than they would others. I mean, they should treat everybody with respect, but unfortunately, as we know, they make fun of a lot of people. But that was, I think, a big turnaround late in last year. And then we had Larry King, which was another huge surprise. Larry King taking this stuff very seriously, and he had his debunkers on, but it wasn't a case where the host is taking the debunker's side as usual. This is a case where Larry King is doing the opposite, I think. You know, he's really taking the side of these military and other witnesses who had witnessed some incredible things. And, you know, taking the debunker to task, which is wonderful because, of course, the UFO investigators are always taken to task and ask some really difficult questions. This time, you know, the debunkers were really faced with some difficult questions to say, okay, you don't think this person's lying, but you think they're misinterpreting something that they were able to touch physically with their hand that was within feet of them. They're misinterpreting this large triangular object as a star or some sort of light effect. You know, that sounds ridiculous, and it's wonderful to see Larry King was calling him out on that, and that he's continued to do these shows, even last night, you know, do these shows in this subject and take it very seriously. So that was wonderful. And maybe if you want me to continue kind of down that line of kind of what we saw happening with the media.
Sure. In fact, a question that had just been sent to me was to ask you if you had seen a change in the way media is handling UFO stories now, especially since the O'Hare UFO incident.
Okay, great segue. O'Hare was definitely treated a little better as well. Starting last year, Symington and O'Hare thing, I think, were the big pieces from last year. I don't know. I think there was a shift. Things were being treated differently and a little better with O'Hare. What I thought was wonderful about O'Hare is that John Hilkovich, the Chicago Tribune writer who broke that story, experienced the same stonewalling that we as UFO investigators face. Fortunately for him, he had a little more clout with the paper backing him, where he was able to get his Freedom of Information Act request kind of worked on a lot quicker than UFO investigators. Sometimes ours just, we never hear back again. But essentially, as some of you may know, when the pilots and ground crew reported this object over at Chicago O'Hare, United had denied it happened. The FAA had denied that they got any reports. When he pushed them, United remembered they had people who had sent them reports, and FAA remembered, oh yeah, I guess we did have some reports on that, but we just think it's a weather anomaly. But of course, these pilots and others who are very credible witnesses saw this ground disc that punched a hole in the cloud, which is extremely difficult to do, and the science behind that, it takes a great amount of heat to essentially evaporate those clouds and keep that hole there for a period of time. So it was very anomalous. It was an unidentified flying object. So that definitely helped. From there, we had probably the next real big one besides Larry King and everything was Kucinich late last year, and Shirley MacLaine's book, Kucinich being asked in the Democratic debates, you know, hey, you had seen a UFO, you know, and asking to comment on that. And it was sad because it was a total setup. And, you know, what happens, unfortunately, is those kind of issues can be used to degrade a candidate and to make a candidate look foolish. I think it's extremely disrespectful and biased of the media to confront Kucinich like that. But and his answer was kind of difficult. He tried to put a couple jokes in there that just really didn't come across. And what was even more sad was the giggle factor did come into play there. Really, in the stories about Kucinich, giggle factor was in full force, like we had seen before, but we really hadn't seen so much last year. And they nailed him on it, calling him a goofball and crazy and all of this stuff. Mufang, we got a lot of calls on this, and some of the media actually did treat it pretty well. I talked to a Los Angeles Times reporter and told her about Grant Cameron's excellent website, presidentialufo.com. She also had heard about it and looked at it a little bit, so she knew something about it. Told her about the history of other presidents who had sightings. Also, Gerald Ford, who had called for the release of information on UFOs, and he wanted congressional hearings back when he was a congressman. So she took all of that stuff, and she wrote a great story. So that was very positive, and that's a pretty big media outlet. So we did have some positive going on there. Bill Richardson was called to task on that subject by the guy who does Hardball, Chris Matthews, and he actually did a great job. He said, you know, the government is hiding information on UFOs. If they just come clean, then we'll be able to get this, you know, all taken care of. They just need to come clean. So that was really cool that he had done that. And then the other thing which I thought was pretty incredible was Shirley MacLaine herself. I know she's really out there, but she's been studying, you know, this stuff for a very long time. And her composure is just phenomenal. She's such a strong, independent woman. And when she was interviewed, she said, yeah, this is what's going on. You know, I know this is going on. I believe in UFOs. We need to talk about this. One of my favorite interviews with her was on NBC, and, you know, these two women were mostly talking about, you know, her rings and how she looks so great, this real general type of stuff. And they asked her, well, what about ever getting married? What if you meet Mr. Right? And her joke was, well, you know, I don't want really anything to do with a Nocturian. I don't want anything to do with anybody from Zeta Reticuli. But a Pleiadian may fall for a Pleiadian, something similar to that, which was hilarious to those few of us who know what she's referring to. But these reporters really got confused by that. But even more significant, which was her interview with Matt Lauer. She had an interview with Matt Lauer where they went into this stuff, and he treated her very respectfully and took her very seriously. He genuinely seemed to be a fan of hers, and she went into UFOs. He asked, why do you believe in this stuff? Why do you think this is such a big deal? And she was very articulate in answering, you know, she's had friends, stars, who have told her about this stuff, that this is going on. She knows this is going on. She had her own sightings. She answered it great. And why I think that was significant is, first of all, it seems like Shirley MacLaine does have a lot of fans out there. A lot of people do appreciate her. I took a couple of her interview clips and put them on our MUFON YouTube site so people could see those. And we've gotten a lot of comments. And the comments are very, well, I don't think I put them on a YouTube one. I put them on my personal one. And the comments were all very positive. You know, YouTube and comments online, if you look at some of the stories that come out, the commenting's really sad. It's terrible. People are just so rude and disrespectful and quick to make fun and just be very negative. But every comment on those YouTube posts are extremely positive. She's got a lot of fans out there. And Matt Lauer seeming to be one. Because what happened soon after, this was mainly November when, it was late October when Kucinich had his speech, and then it was the November time period where Shirley MacLaine was getting interviewed. And then in January, we had Stephenville happen. And the incredible thing about Stephenville was the way the media treated it, because they were very, very positive about the whole thing. They took it very seriously. There was some tongue-in-cheek, but the general overall tone was very serious. And what I think was really groundbreaking in this arena is that you then had Matt Lauer and Al Roker actually admit that they believed in UFOs, and they believed that they're probably ETs flying in and checking us out in these UFOs. And that's amazing, because that really truly shows a shift in media and kind of the whole public arena in this subject. Just like in high school, you know, the cool kids are the ones who drive what the public is comfortable with, what they will speak about, kind of the trends on how things will go. And it's always been, you know, the cool kids who don't talk about UFOs. It's those goofy weirdos. But when you have the cool guys, the Matt Lauers, the Al Rokers, the people that people look up to, saying, yeah, you know, that's, you know, it's cool to believe in UFOs, that's a true shift, that they feel comfortable enough to go there. I saw another interview on Fox they were covering Stephenville, and his co-host had asked him, you know, do you believe in UFOs? And he said, you know what? He paused for a second. You could tell he wasn't sure if he wanted to say it. And he said, yes, I do. And she said, well, you know, it looks like you're not alone. And she went into this poll. But he actually put himself on the line as well. And that right there signifies to me a big shift. Larry King, of course, then covered that, as well as the rest of the world. And Larry King treated it very well. He kind of went over the Phoenix Lights again and likened it to that. But what I thought interesting here again was that Larry King brought forward witnesses from the Phoenix Lights. And these witnesses, you know, a couple of them I remember were these attractive young women who were, you know, and others who were like the people look up to. They hear again, it was the cool kids coming out and saying, look, we saw a UFO, that was a UFO. Nerdy debunker guy, you can't tell me those were jets because I'm not stupid. I know when jets are flying, you know, 200 feet over my head. And this was
The guy tried to tell him it was A-10s.
Yeah, A-10s. A-10s are not quiet planes.
No, they're not. They're very noisy. I used to work near the approach path to an air guard unit that flies A-10s. And you'd hear them coming miles away.
Yeah, these tank killers, you know, these are loud, loud planes. And they would have known if they were planes. And, you know, reiterating, you know, what I saw was a huge triangular formation of light, and it was completely silent that slowly passed over their heads. So they were able to, here again, you know, I think make it more acceptable for people to feel comfortable talking about their sightings. And I think that's what the huge shift was when it came to this. And so far, you know, we were blitzed. I myself was answering phone calls straight for a couple days, and then answering, still fielding a lot of them for a week or two after. And then, of course, our guys down in Texas, they were just swamped. Ken Sherry, Steve Hudgens, they did an excellent job getting back with the media. They were on Larry King. They were all on every media, all over the place. And they were treated very well in the subject. So the media was doing a decent job of, wow, you know, what's going on down here in Texas. So, and we've seen that continuing. The media has done a real good job at covering things in an unbiased perspective. The History Channel, it's just amazing the number of documentaries on UFOs they do. A friend of mine mentioned, and I mentioned this at the press conference yesterday, that, you know, on Christmas Day, the History Channel, of course, when we're kids, we remember TV covering all about, you know, the history of Jesus and about Christmas stories. But on Christmas Day, the last 2 years, the History Channel has had UFO documentaries all day long. So there seems
I've noticed that swing myself.
There really seems to be sort of a shift that it's kind of okay to take this stuff seriously, and that's been wonderful. I think that's what is helping Peckman with his ballot initiative. I think people were skeptical in the beginning. Unfortunately, I don't know that this showing this video has helped him, except for to get the word out there. And actually, it probably has helped him get some attention, and it probably will help him get some more signatures, which is great. It's difficult, though, of course, for media and others to take this next step, to even look into the possibility of these people having video of any sort of creatures out there. It will be the next step. I think it's probably inevitable that there'll be some sort of video that'll get the, have enough analysis behind it and be backed by enough credentialed people that it will really hit the public, and it'll be hard to deny. Whether that stands up or not, I don't know. I hope that his stuff gets the attention it needs, and it gets the analysis and the research that it needs by credible people who have the credentials, and that then it can be displayed in a way that is harder to poke holes in. That'd be the best way to present really everything that he has there, and maybe his case will be the one to really demonstrate that. Maybe not. Maybe it'll be a different one. But
well, this video that was released yesterday of his, everybody's going nuts about it. But from what I understand, the only thing that the only video segment that, how do I explain this? There's a mock-up video, I guess.
Yes.
That everybody is mistaking for the real thing, for the real video.
Yeah. That's really unfortunate. There's a local ghost hunting group, the Rocky Mountain Paranormal group, and this guy kind of goes around and debunks and talks extremely negative about other UFO people in the area, or ghost hunting groups in the area. So really, if him and his group don't discover it, they discount, and they really are very negative and really kind of just hateful and mean when referring to other groups doing this kind of research. So like I said, Stan has been showing some local groups the same meetings that Jeff Peckman was at, these guys were at, so they were able to see some of this evidence, so they were able to prepare themselves to capitalize on this event, and they've done so, and they are getting a lot of attention, so they've been successful in their efforts to capitalize. Their video, is obviously some sort of doll. I mean, it moves like a human and everything. So unfortunately, people are mistaking it, which I think was their intention. But
their way of probably trying to discredit.
Yeah, really debunk and really just capitalize on the whole thing. But when people, hopefully, there'll be a time where people will be able to, this information or this video will be released to the public, maybe in a way like a DVD or whatever, and they'll be able to make comparisons, and even more so, hopefully there'll be some more analysis done, and with the body of evidence that Stan has, I think it makes it more compelling. But yeah, please don't get mistaken by any video out there. Stan has not released the video of what he showed, only one clip and or one picture, a still frame, and that still frame looks nothing like the fake video out there.
Yeah, that's like I said, everybody has just been all abuzz with this, and a lot of people don't realize that that's not the actual clip. It's just a recreation.
Right.
And it's been trying to get that out so that everybody knows, you know, wait a while, maybe we'll get the real video out soon and go from there, judge from there.
Hopefully,
yes. Another question that had been sent to me a little bit ago asked, were you surprised as much as other researchers that so much media attention was given to the Stephenville tech sightings?
That's a wonderful question, because I was very surprised by that. Really, we field these questions on a regular basis. I get calls, because I handle the media relations. I get calls a few a week, you know, from rural papers who send us something saying, hey, you know, somebody reported a sighting in this area. Did you also receive a report on that? Are you investigating this? And what I'll do is get them in contact with our local investigators, because we have investigators in practically every state. And usually they'll get with our local investigator, write up a story, and you know, water under the bridge. Story's over. Same thing happened here. This one is actually a little funny, because Angela Joyner, who I talk to actually fairly regularly, now she you know, got a hold of us. Same question. Yes, you know, contact Ken Cherry, and he'll hook you up with what they're doing. And then she calls and says, hey, they're not going out to do an investigation for like a week and a half. I want to do my story today. And, you know, well, these guys work. You know, we're all working 40-hour-plus weeks, you know. We all have regular lives, and some people have families and other things to attend to. Plus, you know, that's a little bit of a ways from Dallas-Fort Worth, where our investigators were. So they needed to find a time that worked for them and the witnesses to go down and meet them. So she wrote her story about that and said, you know, more to come. We're going to go out there and meet the witnesses in a week and a half on Saturday. The AP called after her story launched. And, you know, we even talked to national media once in a while. And still, it didn't raise up any flags for me. I talked to her and told her, yeah, this is what was going on. She could talk to Ken. I gave her the figures about how we receive thousands of reports a year. We're receiving over 200 reports a month at that time. And she took that and she wrote a story on Stephenville and included that information, which was wonderful. And it was part of national AP. And when she released it, you know, as you noticed from reading newspapers or reading news online, lots of news sources take their news from the AP, and it exploded. There were articles all over the place, mostly hers, but someone had rewritten an article saying something about UFO researchers to descend on a small town in Texas. And I think they were referring to the two or three researchers that we had going out there at the time. They were really just kind of driving as opposed to descending. But we got calls from all over the place. The Rotary Club had called from Dublin and said they would have a place to house Ken Cherry and his investigators to talk to the researcher or talk to the witnesses, and for the media to be there. And we had media from all over the world literally calling us, hey, we want to get out there. You know, I had Geraldo's guys calling and saying, you know, we want to get out there. Should we take a film crew? Should we not? And I don't know. You know, you guys know better than I do. Well, okay, well, maybe we'll have your guys film some stuff and send us. Then calling back, wait, Bill O'Reilly's guys going out there. What's the deal here? I don't know. You know, Bill O'Reilly's coming. I didn't even know. You know, well, we're just going to use his film crew. But just, you know, all of these interesting conversations with media. Sure enough, when the day came around, there were 500 people, about 50 of those were witnesses, less than a dozen of those were our investigators. I think we had six or seven there. And the rest were media and interested public, people from the public. And so it was just a complete circus. And how did it all stem? Getting back to the question, sorry, for the roundabout answer. From a few people having sightings in the area. I mean, no big deal. Same thing we get. You can go to the MUFON.com. Like I said, we get thousands of reports, and you can look at the search the database, and you can see dozens of sightings that are just as exciting as what happened in Stephenville. It wasn't that big of a deal. There weren't pictures. There weren't videos. In San Diego, just a few minutes into the new year, there were some college kids who videotaped some lights cruising over San Diego. Very, very interesting video. The local Fox News in San Diego picked it up and did a little bit of a story, but nobody else picked that up. That was a much bigger story, I thought, than Stephenville.
But oh, I agree.
So it was very curious to me. I still don't really understand it.
I personally think the reason why it got so big is because it was so close to President Bush's ranch there in Texas.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. The thing is that didn't even really that wasn't part of the original stories that had gone out. That didn't really go out until later, and Bush hadn't been in the area during the time. So it could be. That could be why. I don't know why that story got so big. Maybe because it was safe. It's really not ruffling any feathers if, you know, you have a few people down here in rural Texas seeing some UFOs. It's easy for people to blow off, and it's not anything too scary and shocking like perhaps.
Well, that's
true.
Small town mentality would be the way people would look at it. And
so,
versus a large metropolitan area like San Diego.
Right. So that's a great question. I still, I'm not completely sure why the Stephenville sighting was the one that really blew up like that.
Were you surprised or impressed or disillusioned or, your basic opinion of Bill Burns and his crew going in and doing some investigating and the final output of that particular episode of UFO Hunters?
Unfortunately, I was a little preoccupied when I was watching that episode, and I recorded it, and I watched it. I thought they did some interesting things. We're all trying to do our best, really, and I think they are, too. Certainly, there maybe are some things outside of that show that I don't necessarily always agree 100% with UFO Magazine and what Bill Burns does, but I do appreciate the show. I think it's interesting. I like the show, and I feel very positive about the show in general. He's been great to us with MUFON and featuring our guys, and it's been a wonderful relationship that way. So, not necessarily. I mean, they got in there. They got in our way a little bit, with the investigation, to be completely honest. But, that happens. We're all trying to get in there and get an idea of the story. So I wasn't really disillusioned. Are you referring to a particular piece of the story?
It seemed kind of strange that they would find some guy with video footage, which, personally, I've scrutinized the video myself, and I have my doubts of the validity of it.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I have some.
And the MUFON investigators come up with no photos and no video.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that was unfortunate. That video that they got, we had spoken to that witness first. And his guys had spoken to that witness. And a lot of people came in there and kind of snatched up the video before we got to take a look at it. Now we have gotten to take a look at it. And what they found is what, unfortunately, I thought would be found. It's a star, most likely a star in its hand jiggle. And the reason I think that I know is because of experience. I've been an investigator. They had the camera on full zoom, 32x,
and it was full digital zoom.
Right. You know, most cameras, like my camera's pretty cool right here. It's got 20x optical zoom, which is rare. But that's very high. Most have like maybe an 8, 10 time optical zoom, and optical doesn't distort the object. When you get into digital zoom, you know, my advice for listeners, if you're videotaping a UFO, stay out of the optical or out of the digital zoom. In fact, I turn mine off on my camera so it never goes there, because you're just distorting past the optical. It's all distortion. Not only that, if you're zooming, as many people already know, you really need to be on a tripod, because it is absolutely impossible for the human hand. This gentleman was, you know, stabilizing the camera by putting it up against the post on his out there in front of his house. But still, if your hand is touching that camera, it is impossible to stabilize a picture if you're touching that camera. In order to get a stable picture, you have to have it on a tripod, especially if you're zooming. So given those factors, given that I knew he was holding the camera, I was very skeptical, because it looks just like, if any of you right now can go out and put your camera on 32X and go videotape a star tonight, a bright one, and you're going to get something that's going to look extremely similar to that video. So our guys, including you know, our best video analyst, Bruce McAbee, have concluded that that was a star. The witness, which, you know, others hadn't reported, had actually, in a few days in a row, gotten the same video in the same direction, which then also supports that it was a star, because stars are usually in the same place, you know, very near the same place they were the night before. So most likely that's what that video is. And I know some people don't feel too happy about that analysis, but, you know, we really have to... like you said, you know, you've looked at it yourself. You really have to just call it as it is, in order to be true to yourself and to what we're doing here.
Yes, I agree on that. And we are just about time for our break, and I've got a couple little blurbs I got to put in here. Okay. I want to welcome our listeners on UPRN 105.8 FM in New Orleans. Thank you for joining us this evening. And also, we now have two ways that you can access our station with UpSnap. Text PARA, that's P-A-R-A, to the number 27627 on your mobile phone, and listen to the Paranormal Radio Network. That's PARA, P-A-R-A, to the number 27627, or call 201-765-9737 to listen to UFO Paranormal Radio Network. And on that, we need to go to a break, and we'll be back in just a few. And welcome back to Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis, here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, DeAndrew, here on UPRN 105.8 FM New Orleans. And my guest tonight is Alejandro Rojas. Alejandro, I noticed that you are also head of the whole education program for MUFON.
Yeah, well, Public Education Director is my official title.
Oh, there he goes. I was looking at my notes and couldn't find it. Sorry about that. What do you do in the realm of public education for MUFON?
Well, my goals, I have a lot of goals, but fortunately, probably, I found that my time is taken up so much with media relations these days that I spent a lot of time doing that. But some of the other things is providing presentations to the rest of the MUFON organization, the states, so that they can do talks and, you know, also prompt them to do local talks. It's not too difficult to kind of get your name out there. We have, I don't think an inordinate amount, but we have a lot of paranormal and metaphysical type of groups out here in Colorado. So once you get your name out there, you know, you'll find that these groups are often looking for speakers, they're looking for subjects and people to come and talk. And a lot of them, you know, are terribly interested in UFOs. They just don't know much, or they don't know anybody to come talk to them. So once you make those connections, they'd love to have you come out and do a presentation and share some information that they otherwise didn't have access to or didn't know about. So that's been a lot of fun. That's been around, you know, creating these presentations and then getting those out there to the states to conduct those presentations has been a lot of it. And then also working with coordinating, getting speakers to different events, or and channeling, you know, when people come, you know, we want a speaker, I'm in this area, and getting that information out to the local group so they can go and they can go out and educate the public.
Well, that's what we're doing here tonight.
Yeah.
What other deals do you do for MUFON? You mentioned you're a field investigator, media, director of public education. It sounds like you've got a very full plate.
Yeah, so with the media, for the most part, I am pretty much officially the spokesperson. So I love to have, and I know people do love to speak to our director, so I'll get James to do talks if possible or speak with the media or do radio interviews such as this. But you know, a lot of the times he's very busy. He's our organization is doing some really great things. They're getting a lot of really cool things rolling and things that are needed. We're working on stuff like, of course, the journal is a regular, something normally that we do. And the journal comes out monthly and has a lot of our research. In fact, we put our Stephenville results in our journal, so our journal subscribers get that. It's only $45 to be a member per year, and so it's pretty cheap to be able to be involved and get that journal subscription and be able to keep up to date on a lot of the very interesting stuff that we're finding on a regular basis. James is extremely busy with that piece. We have our CMS, which is wonderful, where you can go online and report a sighting, or you can go online and search for sightings. We have the quick hit of looking at the last 25 sightings, and then also you can do searches by state or by dates or by time or by object shapes and things like this. So if you're a researcher or if you're just curious, you know, hey, I remember in 1985 I saw a silver disc over Cleveland, you know, did anybody else see something at the same time I did? And you can go research that, or just peruse it to find out. People also can post their pictures and their video on there if they have video to post. So they can go there and look at those pictures and videos and see for themselves what they think of some of what people are submitting to us. So that's a big project. One of the really cool things with our CMS that's coming up in the next couple of months, hopefully even sooner than that, is you'll be able to go in there, and when you do your search for sightings, you'll be able to get it graphically, a map. So when you do your search, the map will come up, and there'll be little UFOs wherever the sightings are in your area or whatever search criteria you want to do, and you can highlight that little UFO, and it'll give you the details about that sighting. There also will be some variations. So, for instance, a UFO without any landing gear out means, or it was in the sky, or if it has landing gear, it means someone reported an actual landing. So we'll have a little bit of variations in those graphics like that. But it's going to be a very interactive interface. And I'm really excited about that because I've seen the demo and it's very, very cool. And, you know, one of the things I do locally and I encourage others to do when they're going out there doing talks is to take a map. You know, I had someone locally do a more professional job this year. I used to just put the little stickers. But I get a map of Colorado because that's where I am and I'm doing my talks. And I'll put on there where the sightings were so people can see, you know, just how many sightings there are in the various areas throughout the state and see where they are. And that's extremely popular when we're going out, especially if we have a booth at, let's say, a convention of some sort. People want to stop by and say, hey, you know, that's the same place we had our sighting. Or, you know, remember when we were driving from Albuquerque to Denver and we were in the San Luis Valley and we saw something, you know, they can look where that was and see if there were other sightings in that area. And, you know, it prompts them to come up and say, you know what, I saw something in this area too, and tell us about it. And we can have them go to the website and post their sighting for corroboration with other people. So that's why that map is really cool, because people will be able to pull up a map of their local area, pull up a map of their state, or if you want to even pull up a map of the United States with all the little UFO icons on there, print that out, and maybe even make a bigger picture, a poster size, where you can take that with you on your talks and everything, or just include it in your PowerPoint so you can show people just how many sightings there are out there. I had mentioned that we get 200 sightings a month. That's what I had told that AP reporter when she called about Stephenville. Since Stephenville, that's doubled. We're getting more like 400 or 500 reports a month since Stephenville. And people ask, well, why? Are people seeing more UFOs? I don't think so, at least to that degree. Maybe there are, but I think more so people are getting to know who MUFON is, and they're getting to know that, hey, there is some place I can go to report my sighting. And so more people are getting to MUFON and reporting their sighting. So we've got a lot of cool things. We're also working on another great initiative, is getting back into the business. A lot of people are always asking, where are the scientists? Scientists, or stating out, right, that scientists are not interested in UFOs, that's why I don't believe in them. Well, that's not true. Scientists are actually there are many, many scientists interested in UFOs. You, in fact, had referred to Jack Kasher being on your show, who's a professor at the University of Nebraska, Dr. Maccabee, Stanton Friedman. You had Nancy Talbot on, it looks like, who works with a lot of scientists. Actually, I was talking to her just 2 seconds before I answered your phone call. I absolutely love Nancy. She does some excellent work. But there's an example of some of the people you've had on. We actually have over 100 PhDs as consultants for MUFON. There are a lot of scientists out there. That press conference that we had yesterday, Claude Swanson, a physicist and a scientist who had gotten his degrees from MIT and Princeton and worked in some very prestigious laboratories. He was there to talk about the science of UFOs and how a lot of people, you often hear the CSETI or the SETI people saying, you know, well, we don't believe that anything's here because this is too far to travel, even from the next star. Well, Dr. Swanson was to say, actually, the theoretical physics, we can show that it is possible to go past the speed of light. It's possible to, most likely possible to create these wormholes and to actually move vast distances in short amount of time. So that's not a very good argument anymore. So we have a lot of scientists. So what are we doing about it? We're trying to get up again a journal, a scientific peer-reviewed journal for scientists who are interested in this field to write their papers and submit it to this quarterly journal. And we're doing that in conjunction with some other organizations. But we'll have that rolling out soon. And I'm extremely excited about that because then we will be getting a scientific perspective in this arena. We'll be able to point to yes, there are scientists involved. In fact, here's a journal full of papers by scientists out there. And I think it'll pull people out of the woodwork, because you never know. There are a lot of times, anecdotally, I'll hear people saying, well, I talked to my professor, or I talked to this scientist, and this scientist has actually told me, you know, what they're working on and how they're terribly interested in UFOs, and they would love to talk about this and that and why they believe. And so, you know, these people, these scientists, are coming out of the woodwork as people are feeling more comfortable admitting to their belief in UFOs and maybe even different sorts of evidence that they hold themselves. So I think that's going to be a big key, is enticing the science arena and enticing that community to come out and get involved. That Lord knows there are a lot of investigators out there with some incredible evidence that they haven't been able to get looked at. Just like with the Romanek case, there's some great stuff there that really needs to be scrutinized. We need these sort of resources.
I have another question that was sent to me that says, speaking of hard science, other than UFO trace cases, do you think there is more to be learned by ufology, or is all the rest just lights in the sky?
Let's see. I guess the question would be physical evidence beyond trace cases.
Well, other than UFO trace cases, do you think there is more to be learned by ufology, or is it all just Or is all the rest just lights in the sky?
Well, I guess I think if I'm understanding the question correctly, there's more than just trace cases when it comes to physical evidence or science that can be done in this arena. Including the lights in the sky. But what I mean by that is, you know, kind of the work that Ryan Wood is doing with crash retrievals. If they can find, essentially, they're confident that there have been some crashes of craft, such as Roswell. And I think the majority of the UFO community does believe that there was a legitimate crash of some sort of ET craft in Roswell, and probably in other places. And that if that is the case, then there may be a chance that we could go out there and with enough well-done research, you know, Chuck Zukowski, that's what he's doing. He spends a lot of time. In fact, he's out in Roswell right now looking for more crash spots. And if they can find, you know, a piece of a craft, that would be phenomenal. That would be some science, some work we can do around what that is made of to demonstrate to people. So that's a piece of physical evidence. Another interesting piece that scientific work can and has been done around is along physiological effects, and not just, you know, in abduction scenarios. Daryl Sims, for instance, has I think was the first guy to recognize fluorescence in abductees, people who had claimed to have been taken, and then they have fluorescence under their skin, under these scoop marks or some of the other marks that they have. And that's terribly interesting, and that's something that really, really needs to have some science done on, because I've seen this myself in abduction cases where I've taken, you know, that person and asked them to scrub themselves really well and watch them to make sure this isn't some sort of hoax. And this stuff is genuinely under the skin. So we really need someone in the, you know, dermatology area or something to go take some samples and figure out what that is.
Don't a lot of people who have sightings or sightings of objects that are fairly close wind up with their sleep patterns messed up or even problems sleeping?
Well, you know, that has been reported to happen. I haven't personally ran into someone who has had that happen outside of something that seems to be an abduction experience. And it could be, I think a lot of people would speculate that perhaps those people are having those sleeping problems because, you know, there is some sort of experience that way going on. And then I like to be of the John Mack school of, you know, abduction research personally, but there's a lot of perspectives out there. And MUFON, we certainly do not, right now, we're not in the business of saying one's better than the other, but a lot of ideas around, you know, the psychology of those experiences. But another physical effect was, are some of the effects from people who are close to the objects. One case in particular I can think of is a case that John Schuessler worked on with the Cache Landrum in Texas, where these people had seen a UFO close to the road and got close to it. Their car and their skin started burning when they were close to it. When it took off, you know, they then had physical effects.
And then it melted the road.
Yeah, melted part of the road. And they had physical effects that had possibly been, you know, people still the cause of, you know, one of their deaths years later. But, you know, things like their skin falling, or their hair falling out. And, yeah, problems with their skin and their vision being blinded for a period of time. So physical effects like this are definitely some other science that can be done. Some hard science. And even with the lights in the sky, a lot of people feel that there have been technological breakthroughs, and there have been inventors who have said, you know, people are reporting craft that looks like this. Well, I took that idea and those aerodynamics or otherwise, and I ran with that, and I was able to make some breakthroughs in an invention I'm working on. In fact, you know, John Schuessler, I mentioned him before, he wrote a lot of papers telling NASA we need to look into this, because just for simply the technology that they exhibit, if we can watch these things and see how they move and try to figure out why they're doing what they do, or I mean how they do what they do, perhaps we can enhance our own technology. In fact, Dr. Wood, Bob Wood, who is Ryan Wood's father, Ryan Wood is the guy who does the crash retrieval conferences. Bob Wood has been in this field a long time, and he worked for McDonnell Douglas, and he was tasked for a period of time to create a group that would essentially back engineer UFOs from visual data. So they didn't have any UFOs to give him to work off of, but they had a lot of sighting reports, and the government and the Air Force opened up their database of sighting reports to him so he could do this work. He actually then hired Stanton Friedman to help him with this project, but unfortunately, before it even began, the funding was pulled and those files were cut off from them. But that was
something I was not aware of.
Yeah, really interesting story. In fact, that's what got Ryan Wood, his son, involved with this, was, you know, Stanton Friedman coming to dinner and him and his father having these discussions about UFOs. Well, Ryan was young and at the dinner table, which would be a pretty neat experience for a kid, I feel.
Oh, really?
But, so there is a lot more, and I'm sure there's hard science here that I can't even think about. I know Claude Swanson, in his physics, he uses various different types of paranormal phenomena, including the UFO phenomena, to observe them, to try to put together pieces of theoretical quantum and other physics, multidimensional type of physics, to explain and to help him in his models of how the world works and how physics works, essentially. And he feels that these observations have helped him to understand quantum physics and the capabilities, what's capable and what our science is proving is possible. So there's a lot of hard science that's possible in this arena, which is why it's just kind of silly that the Condon Report back in 1969 had concluded that there was no scientific value to the study of UFOs, and that's just I just don't understand that perspective at all.
Well, then you know, there's a lot of scientists that have an interest in this subject, but they're too afraid to go open with it because it's, you know, it could be detrimental to their careers.
That's a very good point, because I am familiar with instances of this myself, of people who have done some incredible work, and that incredible work was inspired or resulting from UFO interactions or instances, but they can't share that or aren't willing to share it because they don't want to lose their funding. Credibility and is extremely important for many scientists who are getting grants and things like this, and they don't want to lose their funding because it's politically, you know, dangerous for these funding sources to give them money, or it hurts their credibility, so they can't or won't talk about those things for those reasons. So
yeah, and then the ones that do, like, for example, Harley Rutledge, back in the late 70s, was able to get funding from a local newspaper and from the college where he taught to do some field studies.
Yeah. And so luckily, sometimes there are some open minds and people can get some things through. And it would be wonderful if there was more of that. Hopefully, you know, like with our peer review journal, we'll be able to hope entice some scientists to do that sort of work.
Any idea when that will begin publishing?
No, I'm not sure. You know, I know we're in the beginning stages. James is in the beginning stages of our director, James Carrion, of making that happen. Hopefully, you know, we'll see this by the end of the year, if not early next year. And I know our Robert Powell, our director of research, is also trying to help make that happen and organize an actual convention or separate type of symposium just for scientists to present to each other on their findings or feelings in this arena.
Oh, well, you have to keep us updated on the progress of that.
Will do.
By chance, have you yourself had any sightings?
I have. And that's, I find, really interesting. When I first got involved with this stuff, I hadn't had any sightings, which was actually kind of rare, because when you go to these meetings, we luckily have a pretty strong MUFON group here in Colorado, and we have monthly speakers, and a lot of the people involved had sightings themselves, and that's what got them interested in all of this, and I hadn't had sightings. So it was some time before I had a sighting. My very first sighting was in the San Luis Valley here in Colorado. You may be familiar with it if some people are familiar.
Yes.
With cattle mutilations. The first one happened there, and there's been many there, and lots of high strangeness, as Stephen Greer puts it, because he actually does his CSETI, a yearly CSETI training out there in Crestone, which is in the San Luis Valley. Well, I was out in the San Luis Valley and at a place called the UFO Watchtower, my first time visiting this little store, and the wonderful person who runs that store, Judy Meseline, UFOWatchtower.com is her website, and we were talking and talking, and I knew part of the CSETI protocol. I was real interested in that because of course, I was interested in disclosure, and Stephen Greer's other group is CSETI, and they claim to have a protocol that helps call in UFOs. So, you know, as being a diligent, you know, and you want to try everything. And I had gotten the sound, or the sound that they've got, they use in this protocol, is the sound that was recorded in a crop circle. And at first, it sounded like crickets, but then when you looked into it, it wasn't crickets. It was a mechanical type of sound, and it's kind of a neat sound. So I recorded that and brought it with, but I couldn't remember the rest of the protocol. luckily, a CSETI-trained person came in, and we got to talking, and we're all talking away. And she said, I know the protocol. And I said, okay, let's go try it. So about 9 o'clock, when it was starting to get dark in the middle of the summer, we went and did this protocol. Then we went back downstairs, and because we were so engrossed in our discussion, instead of watching the sky, we went back into the little shop and talked and talked and talked. In the meantime, there was a couple, some Mexican nationals that came in, and they didn't speak English, but luckily my sister was with, and her boyfriend spoke Spanish, and they had said that they had a sighting out there a week ago, and this happens in the San Luis Valley, where it looks like a car miles up in front of you, and all of a sudden it leaves the road and flies up into the sky. That had scared him, and his children even started crying when they saw this. So they decided to come to the watchtower and ask if other people had those experiences. And indeed, many people do in the San Luis Valley, among many other sightings. She had only been open a year or two when I was there, and she already had 20-something sightings reported, and Judy herself had seen the majority of these. So luckily my sister and the kids were out there, and my sister said, I think there's a satellite out here. But the way she said it, I could tell there was some excitement in her voice. So I ran out there, and sure enough, and we all ran out there, there's this extremely bright object, maybe 30 degrees above the horizon, just above the mountains, which of course the satellite's going to be directly above you, not at the horizon. So it's just over the mountains, extremely bright. And it goes across when it gets directly east of us, which we have the National Sand Dunes out there, where it's directly east of us as well. It fades out, steadily fades out. And everybody with strange reported something different, that it faded. Some said it pulsed as it went out. Some felt that it kind of went and stopped, kind of in a strange action. But it did do something strange as it faded out. I was just like, you know, with my jaw dropped, holy crap, you know, that my mind is running through man-made objects that could be, and it couldn't make any connections. I'm like, wow, it disappeared. And the CSETI person said, no, it didn't. And she had somehow gotten all the way to her car and gotten some binoculars out and had binoculars trained on it, which was pretty impressive. And she said when it dimmed out, she actually saw it go down towards Mount Blanca, which is the largest mountain in that area, which lots of people say they've seen UFOs go into, interesting enough. So that was my first sighting, which was in a place where people see lots of UFOs. So I would advise people to go to hot spots. Even the UFO Watchtower in the San Luis Valley of Colorado, if you like to catch some of these UFOs. But my other three times, and I was highly skeptical, and I always am, when people come in and say, I'm an abductee and UFOs follow me around. Especially when I first got in this, you know, I'm like, yeah, right, come on. You know, these three people are now good friends of mine, very close friends of mine, and one of them who even came and said, yeah, I UFOs following me around and I get video of them sometimes. Yeah, right. Went to her house and sure enough, she had some strange videos that I couldn't explain of these, you know, small objects floating over the Denver skies. And sure enough, it wasn't too long after that over her house we saw, you know, this thing. It was during the day. And it looked like a bright star sitting there. So I'm thinking, okay, what's going on here? It's got to be a star that's so bright we can see it this early, which actually didn't make any sense at all because it was too early to see a star. Watched it for a period of time. It faded out. And then just above and to the right of where it was, it faded back in for a small period of time and faded back out again. Then another time with another person who was the same, claimed he was an abductee and had seen UFOs a lot. And then the last one I saw was with Stan over his house one night, talking, and all of a sudden there's a large amount of satellites going back and forth through the sky, which was extremely strange to see so many. However, these things were moving in steadily in one single direction, once in a while fading out. So I wouldn't call those UFOs, I can't say those are UFOs because they were moving in the same way a satellite would, until one of them did this large loop and then faded out. And satellites definitely don't move in any way like that.
Satellites usually go in a straight line.
Yeah, they don't do this is more like a hook movement, actually, a J-type movement, that it moved in and then it faded out. And so I was like, holy crap. You know, lots of people around Stan have said they've seen UFOs. He seems to be some sort of magnet, and I saw one myself with him. I looked to my, you know, his daughter, he has a teenage daughter, was to my left, and she was watching this too. I was like, did you see that? She says, yeah, I see that all the time. Well, what do you think that was? Oh, that was just a satellite. And I was like, well, you know what, April? Those satellites don't move like that. So that was kind of funny because, you know, they skywatch out there once in a while. So even his stepdaughter had seen these things periodically. So those are my sighting stories.
We've got about 12 minutes before we're done here. Want to kind of move in to the upcoming Roswell conference where you'll be speaking. I noticed that the name of your lecture is MUFON in the Media, Awakening the Sleeping Giant. I don't want you to go into a lot of detail about, you know, what you'll be speaking about on this, but can you give us a little bit of a hint?
Well, I've already actually given you about a lot of the talk, you know, with the history of the media. However, I'll be having those clips there and showing those clips. Also, I have a very, very cool PowerPoint that I put together for it, but I'll be showing video clips going into that, but essentially also getting to the point that, you know, I'm good friends with Paula Harris, an Italian journalist who's going to be speaking at Roswell also, and she's always very frustrated. Oh, America, America's so backwards, they're so skeptical, and it'll never come out here. But I call American media the sleeping giant, because really, if there's any media source out there that is paid attention to by the entire world, that is American media, down from Desperate Housewives to our national news. And so we do have a lot of focus in our media, and I think our media is the key, especially for us as U.S. residents, because unfortunately, a lot of people don't hold other countries in high regard. You know, Americans, we feel the U.S. is number one and the top, and if the U.S. isn't doing it or talking about it, then it's just a bunch of phooey. So it's important that, you know, it is the media giant. It is the sleeping giant. It's what we have to awaken, I think. If we can get the American media on board, that's what energizes people. That's what people creates their perception of reality. And that's when, you know, we'll see more initiative like Jeff Peckman's, where people are demanding that their government tell them something and look into this arena. And I think it's a matter of time before that happens. And really, I kind of think of right now as like the beginning of that Godzilla movie where, you know, Godzilla's under the big mountain and the kids are playing on above it, and Godzilla's kind of getting kind of agitated, and, you know, they're alluding to, uh-oh, Godzilla's about to wake up again and wreak havoc. And I think that's where we are. I think there's a lot of indications here that the sleeping giant's awakening. And if we can keep this momentum moving, and, you know, regardless of what you have to say about the Steele and Stan's video or Jeff Peckman or the movement, it's keeping momentum going, you know, on this subject. It's keeping the subject in the public's mind, and it's keeping people thinking about it, and it's giving more and more the media the opportunity to bring professionals on to talk about it. And we're having more and more people come out and say they admit it. And I think that giant is starting to awaken. And if we can collectively, it's going to take a lot more than just MUFON to do this. If we can do this as a team with everybody focused on all of their different aspects and MUFON, we're focused on our nuts and bolts, you know, together, we'll be able to make this happen. And I think we're going to see some wonderful times as we watch this giant awaken. And we see the havoc that is wreaked when, you know, the masses realize where we are.
Are there any of the other speakers there that their presentations are something you would definitely want to go listen to?
I think probably all of them, you know. A lot of them I know. And I've heard them speak before, but they're such cool people that I always love to hear them speak. Anything that's, like, groundbreaking. Peter Robbins, I actually haven't got to see him speak before, which is unfortunate. I was at the UFO Congress, but I was working it as well, and I had to work the T-shirt table, you know, while he was on. I have a friend here who, an abductee who has worked with John Carpenter, so it'd be really interesting to see him. Richard Dolan is just hilarious and extremely...
Oh, Rich is a great guy.
Yeah, he's so extremely intelligent. He's one of my absolute favorites, so he's always a pleasure to hear. I love listening to Paula. Chuck is really funny, and his sister, they're great. Joe Jordan also, you know, it's been wonderful working with him. He's been working on getting this Roswell thing together. He's part of MUFON, a state section director, and I'm really excited to see his lecture because I've never seen a lecture with him either. So there's a lot of them, you know. I would love to get in all of them, so I'm really excited to be a part of it, and I'm excited to see other people's presentations as well.
A lot of people are pushing for disclosure and coming at that issue from many different angles. Do you think any sort of official disclosure right now is unrealistic?
You know, I kind of have a twofold approach to that one. You know, I understand people's perspective on official disclosure and disclosure coming from maybe the president or what have you. But in a way, I feel disclosure's almost happened already. Every time an official, whether he be retired or, which is mostly the case, coming out and saying, you know what, my name is Colonel Corso, and I worked for the president and I worked at the Pentagon, and I received some pieces from Roswell, and I... you know, got those out, and now we have microchips, and I have my Alienware computer here like Bill Burns because of it. You know, anytime we have that, that's, to me, disclosure. That really is what we're asking officials to come out. George Filer, Robert Salas, a lot of these, the guys on Larry King, Charles Halt, a lot of that is, to me, disclosure. I kind of feel, in a way, disclosure's happened. It's just who's paying attention. And to what degree it's happening at. So I think it's happening slowly. And, you know, Stephen Greer's disclosure project, I mean, when you have those many people coming forward, I think typically a loose definition of disclosure is a bunch of officials coming forward to disclose this reality, which has happened. Now we're waiting for the big guys at the top, but it's a matter of time until that happens. And some people still, you know, Clinton tried and he just didn't have the clout. Maybe the president doesn't have the clout, so
or the need to know, as they say.
Right, the need to know. So I think it's us as a community, the disclosure happens maybe when 51% of the public truly, strongly believes or knows that UFOs are here. Maybe that'll be when 50% of the public has had an incredible sighting, and sightings are happening on a regular basis, and they do seem to be increasing. I don't think they've doubled since Stephenville, but I'm sure they have increased sightings themselves, let alone the reporting that we get. So I think it's happening in the most positive aspect, and we're watching it. We're fortunate enough to be alive right now and to watch this happen, and it's going to be a fun ride. And I think it's important that this Roswell conference get rolling and is strong and continues through these times, because Roswell, of course, is where it all started in the U.S. public mind.
Well, we have about 2 minutes left. If you'd like to mention any upcoming books, your website, any other projects coming up?
I think I've mentioned a lot of what MUFON is up to, and that's what I'd like to plug here, is being sure and going to MUFON.com, checking out what's there. It's a great resource. We have a lot of really cool new paraphernalia as far as like apparel. We've got some new baseball caps. We've got some duffel bags and T-shirts. And one thing people may not know is that we were the first UFO hunters. We actually patented that name first. We have a trademark on it, so we have some UFO hunters. We have a logo, so and that was when, you know, when the History Channel did a show featuring MUFON to the UFO hunters, and so we patented that name. And so we're the first UFO hunters, and we've got that name and some really neat logos with hats and T-shirts that you can purchase that are brand new out there. So go check that out, and definitely check out the sightings in your area. You may find some incredible photos or video that you can share or do some analysis in, or maybe even corroborate. Maybe someone, when you had your sighting, someone else or some others also had that in your area. So go check out the website. It's a great resource, MUFON.com.
And your own website?
My own website? You know, I have some upcoming events, including Roswell, listed there. If you're in the Colorado area or if you want to come out here, I actually hold a UFO briefing every year. It's going to be July 12th this year, same place we had our press conference, actually, yesterday. And it's a day of different speakers. Chuck's going to be speaking, actually. Paula will be speaking, and so will Stan. Stan's going to be showing some of the military or human involvement, some people who have been meddling and observing him and messing with him, and he's going to be showing some of that and some of his other material. So we'll have Stan Romanek there. And then at night, we'll all be going out here to the south to a beautiful spot with wide open skies, and we'll be doing a sky watch, and Stan will be there, and maybe we'll be able to get some sightings and some good video in there. And we'll be sure to bring our tripods. Remember, use your optical zoom and your tripods.
And your website is UFO Think Tank?
UFOthinktank.com, that's right.
Awesome. And there's some good stuff on there. I had a chance to peruse it.
Great.
And, you know, and I wanted to personally thank you, too, for coming on tonight at such short notice. I do appreciate it greatly.
No problem. Oh, and you can check me out. I'm going to be on Coast tonight.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, and unfortunately, we're all out of time. And that's all the time we got. Darn it. I want to thank everyone for tuning in, and also to thank all those who joined us in the Pal Talk Auditorium. Stay tuned for Voice of the People, hosted by November Hansen. Her guests tonight will be Wendell Stevens and Joe Montaldo. And also for my dear friend Peter Robbins, who is helping to organize and coordinate the Roswell Conferences for 2008. Please check out www.roswellmysteries.com/UFO. And join me again next Saturday on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network on UPRN 105.8 FM New Orleans for another episode of Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis, where my guest will be Ron Roguer. Until then, keep an eye to the sky. good night, everyone.